for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
What's up, everybody? Happy Monday. Welcome back once again. This is the FTN DataCast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Here on a Monday, May 23rd, 2022, Adam Pfeiffer joined once again by Tyler Lochner. Had two episodes last week, but I'm glad to have Tyler back doing the running back preview. Last week we did quarterbacks, so we're going to talk about a bunch of running backs today. Tyler, what's up? Welcome back. How was your weekend?
It was great. I'm excited to kick things off on this pod with anyone who has followed me recently with talking about Christian McCaffrey. So I'm excited.
Yeah, like, I think he's a good player. I've looked at some numbers. We'll talk about him. We'll talk about, you know, I know you are very confident in the fact that he should be the first overall selection in fantasy drafts. And I saw you tweeted it to an extent, and it's like you had a lot of interaction on that tweet, and it's like, didn't think it was really a hot take to say if he stays healthy, he's like, you know, kind of light years ahead of everybody else. But we'll break it down like we did at the quarterback preview. We'll go through some of our tiers, talk about a lot of players that stand out. We're obviously not going to sit here and talk about every single running back in fantasy football, but a lot of notable situations, a lot of polarizing players we'll talk about, and all that great stuff. Make sure you're checking out FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, and FTN Bets. We have a ton of content once again up at FTN Fantasy this week. We've been doing a lot of rankings, like positional rankings. We've been doing offensive line rankings, defensive line rankings. They have been awesome. I did an article ranking the top backfields in the NFL, and now this week I'm doing, I think, the top like backup running backs situations for fantasy in the NFL. Tyler, you and Larky have been doing this series with the breakouts, busts, sleepers, all that great stuff. How many teams are you guys done? You've been doing one every day last week, right?
We've done three a week. I think we've done five or six teams. This morning, this is Monday. This morning, we just wrote up the Carolina Panthers.
Yikes! I mean, outside of DJ Moore and McCaffrey, yikes. But you get to talk about McCaffrey more, I bet. So
I do get to talk. I get to talk more about McCaffrey, and yeah, it is a yikes on the Panthers. The one thing I will say about them, and this is in the article, is like, outside of McCaffrey and Moore, you really don't have to spend any draft capital on any of the Panthers. So I don't think it's fair to call any of them like, you know, bust candidates, because you're just not spending anything on them anyway. The reason you're not spending anything is because none of them are interesting for fantasy.
I will say, I don't want to get too off on a tangent, Deonta Foreman's interesting, just because if you believe McCaffrey can't stay healthy, Deonta Foreman is like 50 times better than Chuba Hubbard. Was like literally the least 100% efficient running back in football last year. So,
and Foreman looked good last year.
He's not great,
but he looked pretty good.
We kind of focus on like Marlon Mack and Cam Akers coming back from the Achilles, but Deonta Foreman came back from the same injury and he's looked pretty good. So, he's kind of on my radar. But yeah, check out that article with Larky and Tyler, and of course all the other great content. Let's get to the running back position, Tyler. Tier number one. I'm assuming there's two players in this tier that are not going to be different between us. Jonathan Taylor, Christian McCaffrey. But we both have a little bit of a different third player in our tier one. But I'll let you start. Why should Christian McCaffrey not only be the 101 in drafts, but why should it not even be a discussion almost?
So I actually wrote an entire article about this. I'll tweet it out again, but if you want to dive more into it. But my bottom line with McCaffrey being the 101 is that if he stays healthy, and yes, people, I know that I'm using the word if. I sent a tweet out like that and I got, you know, destroyed for using the word if, but obviously it's an if here. But if he stays healthy, he's definitely going to be the number one overall scoring running back, and probably by a significant margin. He's just that much better at scoring fantasy points than every other running back on a per game basis, per touch basis. The only argument against McCaffrey that I might put a little bit of faith in is that, will the Panthers reduce his touches? Like put him on a little bit of a snap count?
Yeah, Dave was on the podcast Friday and we were kind of talking about that. Like, we had gotten to this point where, remember, McCaffrey was like 90%+ of the snaps every week. I wonder if that goes down to like 75%, which I don't think would even make a massive difference because on a person-to-person basis, he's going to touch the ball so much.
Exactly. And he was never a player that, like, yes, he was playing 90-plus percent of the snaps, but he wasn't, like, routinely touching the ball 35-plus times a game. Like, Derrick Henry was still getting, you know, more work and more physically demanding work. So that's the only argument that I think I will even listen to against McCaffrey is, oh, but what if his role becomes more like an Austin Eckler role? Okay, well, Austin Eckler is a threat to be the number one overall RB, and that's that's if McCaffrey, you know, sees a reduction in role. But the there's the elephant in the room is, oh, Christian McCaffrey's injury prone. And yeah, he's had really bad injury luck the last 2 years. But one thing that if you look at all the injuries, none of them have been significant, right? There hasn't been an ACL tear or an Achilles injury. It's not like Todd Gurley with, you know, chronic career long knee concerns. McCaffrey's had five different injuries, none of which have been, you know, repeats. They haven't been to the same ankle or knee or hamstring or anything. And they've all been sprains or strains. Someone, I can't remember who it was, but someone responded to me and said, oh, I would actually argue that those injuries are related because, you know, if you injure your left ankle, you might overcompensate and then, you know, end up injuring some other body part based on the overcompensation. And that might be true. I'm not an injury expert, but I just know that, you know, these are not devastating injuries and they're not, it's not like he's completely destroyed one of his knees to the point where I'm concerned about it. And then just on the flip side, like the last time McCaffrey played a full season was 2019, and he was just so unbelievably good that I that's just tantalizing to me. And I think when you're picking first overall, that is what you want. You want that ceiling shot. So to me, like my one line summary is you, if you pick Christian McCaffrey, you're playing to win. If you pick Jonathan Taylor, which I don't have any problem with Jonathan Taylor, but if you pick Jonathan Taylor, I think you're playing not to lose.
That's very fair. That's a really good way to look at it. Like, I mean, we can kind of segue right into Jonathan Taylor, who obviously belongs in this tier as well.
Yep.
Clearly the best running back in fantasy last season. He had 100 yards or a touchdown in all but four games. He had 100 rushing yards in 10 different games. Easily led the NFL in carries inside the five with 30. Had 41 carries inside the 10, which also led the NFL.
Everything about his stats, unbelievable. Yeah,
it's insane. Like, missed tackles forced, he was second. He was unbelievable. And, like, there's only one downside with him, and it's his ceiling might be 40 receptions in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the offense, at worst, and I mean literally, like, at worst case scenario, going from Wentz to Matt Ryan is neutral. And I don't even think it's going to be neutral because I think Matt Ryan's better than Carson Wentz.
Agreed.
But that's like the worst case scenario is it's okay, the offense is neutral. Yeah, there's really nothing to not like about Jonathan Taylor, but like I would agree if he plays 16, even, you know, say they both play 15, 16 games, McCaffrey and Taylor. McCaffrey, just because he could catch 100 passes, will probably outscore him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's a good way you put it. Like, if you are, you know, risk averse, you know, that'll impact probably who you're looking at with the first selection. I don't think you can go wrong, but I do agree. Like, I have Taylor one in my rankings just because, you know, sometimes we have to factor in health concerns. It's no secret. McCaffrey stays even remotely healthy, he should just absolutely smash. But yeah, Jonathan Taylor, obviously no slouch either. He was amazing last season, and the offense should be, you know, at worst a little bit better this season, I would imagine.
My favorite Taylor stat that I found was Jonathan Taylor had 1,811 rushing yards last year, and then second in the NFL was Nick Chubb with 1,259, and then third in the NFL was Jonathan Taylor after contact with 1,220 yards.
Yeah, look, Jonathan Taylor, I was watching the game when he came up to Buffalo and literally destroyed dreams for Bills fans, for anybody playing against Jonathan Taylor in fantasy. So he obviously has a ceiling as well. Like, you just worry about maybe what we saw last year with 40 receptions might be the ceiling. You know, they added Philip Lindsay. That's nothing more than a depth piece. They had as their actual, like, Nyheim Hines, if Jonathan Taylor were to miss time, Nyheim Hines wouldn't get 15 to 20 carries. At that point, they had, you know, Deontay Jackson. Philip Lindsay is an upgrade over Jackson, and that's really all it is. But yeah, Taylor should be amazing. Who's the third player that you have in this tier? Because we both have three players in this tier.
No, I actually don't have a third player. You're the only one.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I put Derrick Henry in this tier, but it's more of like a, this is tier one, and McCaffrey and Taylor are 1A. Derrick Henry's 1B, and it's really because I just think he is going to run the ball 25 times a game. He is a threat to run for 2,000 yards. And yes, he missed time last year with the foot injury. That was the first time we've seen him miss time, so I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt a little bit. I still think, even with the fact that he won't catch many passes either, I'm still putting him in this tier because we saw what he was before the injury. He was just amazing. I mean, look at Derrick Henry. He played, what, half the season? Derrick Henry still was, like, ninth in the NFL in rushing yards.
He like, led the NFL in rushing yards until, like, December or something crazy.
Yeah, he was literally ninth. He had 937 rushing yards in 8 games. Like, A.J. Brown's gone. We say this every year. Just give him 3 screen passes a game, and he might take one to the house. They, you know, Mike Vrabel and company, they don't ever do it. But still, like, 20 carries seems like a lock. I don't think they're in a situation where they just kind of limit Derrick Henry because they don't all of a sudden have a lot of reliable talent on offense. And while I wouldn't put them in the Super Bowl window of Buffalo and the Chargers and a lot of these other teams in the AFC anymore, it's not like they're out of it. Like, the division's pretty bad. They're still a talented team. So I still think Derrick Henry gets a ton of work. But yeah, if I had to put it in tier one, it'd be Taylor and McCaffrey 1A, 1B, and then, or 1A, and then Derrick Henry 1B.
Yeah, you can't argue against Henry's stats. You mentioned he's top 10 in rushing yards. He was top 10 in missed tackles forced, top 10 in red zone touchdowns, top 10 in total touchdowns, top 10 in red zone attempts. Even only playing half the year is just ridiculous.
So let's move on to tier two, where we both lead it off with Austin Ekeler. You have Ekeler, Najee Harris, then you have Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook. My tier two is also Austin Ekeler, Dalvin Cook, but then I have Joe Mixon and Najee Harris because I already have Derrick Henry in tier one. From tier two, who do you want to talk about? We have Ekeler, Cook, Najee Harris.
I'll talk about Ekeler. I've always been an Ekeler stan. He was so unbelievably good when he was backing up Melvin Gordon. It was just like I always used to do an article on points per opportunity, which was rush attempts and pass routes run, and also points per touch. And this was in the days of like David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, just destroying the league. And whenever I would look at those stats, it was always those three players and then Austin Ekeler. And it was like, okay, this is a guy that when he gets more opportunity is going to just absolutely demolish in the NFL and for fantasy.
So this is like Tony Pollard from a couple years ago, essentially.
Kind of. And so I've always been an Ekeler fan. I love the fact that he's a legitimate threat to be the overall fantasy RB1. The Chargers drafted Isaiah Spiller, but Ekeler's never been a high volume guy anyway. He only had 206 rush attempts last year for 911 yards. But he scored 12 touchdowns and he had 48 red zone attempts, which was second in the NFL behind only Jonathan Taylor. So I remember it was funny in 2020, the concern with Ekeler was that he didn't get any red zone attempts. And then he turns around and he's one of the best running backs in the red zone last year. And even with Spiller, I still expect that to be the case.
Yeah. So back in beginning of March, actually, I had a series where I wrote about like kind of what changed among each position in fantasy last year. And I obviously wrote about running backs. I had a lot of different pieces from this article, but one part I mentioned was Austin Ekeler's role. And we'd obviously seen him, you know, in that 12 to 15 touch role, and he kind of still lived in there, right? He was a little bit more, like you mentioned, just over 200 carries, but he had 70 receptions. But the goal line role was really what changed. And you look at it, this was his first kind of full season in 2020, where he kind of flirted with fantasy elite status as the RB1 for the team. And then last year was a full-on breakout, right? Like, even with Melvin Gordon gone in 2020, the Chargers gave Ekeler just over 11 carries per game. He only handled 19.6% of the carries from inside the 10, which was a bottom 10 rate among all running backs. But then, he played 10 active games in 2020. In those 10 games, he only saw 2 carries from inside the 5. Remember, Joshua Kelly and Kalen Ballage were getting a lot of short yardage and goal line looks. Then last year, it completely changed. Austin Ekeler had 12 carries from inside the 5, tied for the sixth most among all running backs. He saw over 52% of the Chargers rushing attempts from inside the five, 10 goal line carries with seventh most in the league. And like we talked about, I think, last episode, when we're talking about some of the most efficient running backs converting touchdowns, Austin Eckler was efficient converting touchdowns. He converted 7 of 12 inside of the 5 looks into touchdowns. So we know he's going to catch 60 to 80 passes. And yes, they have Isaiah Spiller. I think that's more of to Justin Jackson's a free agent. He's not there anymore. They wanted to upgrade the secondary running back. And they've also liked to have two running backs, right? Melvin Gordon, Eckler. You know, Eckler was getting work with Melvin Gordon. Spiller will get, you know, that change of pace role, but Austin Eckler clearly still belongs as a top 5 to 6 running back. So the fact that he got that goal line work just kind of put the, you know, it was the icing on the cake for me, because we already know he's getting high value touches in a top 5 offense. That's really all you can ask for. And he's an immensely talented player.
I want to hear you talk a little bit about Mixon. I was a little surprised to see him in your tier 2.
Yeah, really what it comes down to is like, the fact that, and this, I can move him down. The Bengals offense, we talked about it. The first half of the season last year, they were extremely run heavy. They were easing Joe Burrow in coming off the injury. Like, they were really easing him in. They were relying on the running game with Joe Mixon, and they were kind of just making sure Joe Burrow was eased in after the injury. And then second half of the season, their passing rate went up to like top 12. So if they start this season with that same kind of mindset and pass rate, I think Mixon could take a hit, because we've seen his pass catching be really inconsistent. Some weeks he'll have 4 to 6 catches, but a lot of those weeks also came when Chris Evans was out. And Chris Evans has been not Giovanni Bernard level, but he's been their third down running back for a lot of the time since he's been there without Gio Bernard there. So I think there's a very strong possibility that I should have him in tier 3. But right now I have him in tier 2 just because I personally have him like in my rankings and everything. I do have him ahead of Fournette and Alvin Kamara and some of the other players that we're going to talk about in tier 3 and stuff like that. So like Joe Mixon was the one that could go either way. And then we both have Najee in here. Najee's just going to be a volume machine. Like, doesn't matter if you worry about, oh, maybe Trubisky or Kenny Pickett when he's active and starting won't check it down and won't be as conservative as Roethlisberger. It really doesn't matter. I mean, Najee Harris is going to get, he's going to flirt with the league lead in touches and opportunity share. And I wrote about the backfield rankings. Pittsburgh was like 30th because after Najee, it's really bad. Benny Snell's not good. Anthony McFarland's not good. So just volume alone.
I think he'll be like a 90%+ snap player.
Yeah, that's right around what he was last year. So I don't know why he wouldn't again. Like,
yeah,
efficiency might not be amazing. The offensive line hopefully gets a little bit better. But like right there with Derrick Henry could easily lead the league in touches. Tier 3. Who do you have in tier 3? Because this is where it gets a little interesting, especially tier 4 too. We'll get to that next.
So tier 3, I have a pretty short tier 3. And tier 3 is, I think, where I is like the end of the RB1s for me, fantasy RB1s. So my tier 3 is Leonard Fournette, Joe Mixon, DeAndre Swift, Alvin Kamara, Nick Chubb, and Saquon Barkley.
So I think
yours is even smaller.
Three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have the same one, except I don't have Barkley in mind. I have Fournette, Swift, Chubb, and Kamara.
And then you've got Mixon in tier 2, right?
Yep. And that was the one where I could easily move Mixon to tier 3. It was tough. But yep. I think there's a couple really polarizing players here, and two of them I want to talk about, Leonard Fournette and DeAndre Swift. Leonard Fournette, the pass catching role alone was amazing, right? He missed like 3 or 4 games, still led all running backs in first read targets, according to FTN Fantasy, was probably going to lead all running backs in receptions if he didn't miss time. Like his floor at a point was like 4 to 6 receptions every week.
He was first among running backs in receptions before he was injured. So yeah, very likely. He still finished third. I mean, he had 69 receptions.
Right. And like they brought in Rashad White, who I love as a pass catching running back. But I don't think he's going to, like, Tom Brady wants Fournette on the field. And you look into week 1 and to start the season, like, what if Chris Godwin's not there, Antonio Brown's not there, who knows what the hell's going on with Gronk? We could see Fournette, like, the first couple weeks of the season at least, once again in that same role, getting 4 to 6 catches every single game. Plus, he's definitely getting goal line work. Is there really anything to not like about Leonard Fournette right now?
No. I mean, I forget which Tampa beat writer it was, but he hyped up Rashad White, and then just fantasy Twitter went insane with Rashad White hype. But unless Tom Brady like completely falls in love with Rashad White, it's going to be Fournette on the field. Like, that's just the way that the offense is going to operate. It's going to be, who does Tom Brady trust out there? And I know that is not like the most analytical approach to this, but it's been proven time and again that that is how it works in a, you know, in a Tom Brady offense. And that is a pretty steep uphill battle for Rashad White to win, because Fournette full on won it against, you know, Ronald Jones, and he's got the 2 years with Brady now and has proven to be extremely productive, both as a rusher, but more importantly, as, you know, Tom Brady's check down outlet. So I very firmly still have Fournette as a fantasy RB1 and in this tier three group.
If I had to make one argument against Leonard Fournette, it's the fact that last year's competing against Ronald Jones, who's very explosive, but legitimately like maybe the worst pass catcher running back in the league. So it was kind of easier for Fournette to get that role over him. And they obviously added Gio Bernard, who, you know, didn't play much. Rashad White is 75 times better as a pass catcher than Ronald Jones. But Fournette's, I think we could say Fournette's earned that role after last year. He was fantastic for them. So yeah, I think he absolutely belongs in this tier. So does DeAndre Swift, who I'm getting more excited about by the day. Wrote about him a lot the other week. This offense, I mean, look, you're the Lions fan here, right? Like, you love this Lions team.
Oh, God. Yeah, I do.
For DeAndre Swift, he's not going to be in the Derrick Henry, Jonathan Taylor, Dalvin Cook when healthy type of workload, right? We know he's in that Kamara, Aaron Jones mold where he gets maybe 12 carries and 5 to 7 receptions. But those are extremely high value touches. Last season, so he's only had 20 carries in a game once in his career. But I don't care, because you look at what he did last year. He was fourth among all running backs in targets and receptions, had a 14% target share, which was top three at the position. And he had that stretch. Remember the Thanksgiving game against Chicago, he had the shoulder injury and he got hurt and missed a lot of time. Prior to that game, it was the first, what? It was, I think it was like week 11, but prior to that game, he was the RB5 in fantasy, led all running backs in receptions and targets. Only Cordarrelle Patterson had more receiving yards than DeAndre Swift. And then you look at his end of season numbers. Keep in mind, he returned in weeks 17 and 18, but he was on a limited snap count. I think it was the game against Seattle. Remember, like, it was the fantasy playoffs and he barely played. And that was after Dan Campbell said, like, yeah, he's good to go. We're not limiting him. Like, he's playing, and he barely played. He played under 60% of snaps in both of those games, which was well below his 73% snap rate during the first 10 weeks of the season where he was the RB5. Now you have him back healthy. Jameson Williams and DJ Chark will continue to, you know, stretch the defense and give Swift even more room to operate in the intermediate and short parts of the field. And that's where Jared Goff wants to throw. Lowest intended air yards per attempt last year for Jared Goff. Lowest air yards per completion. This is a spot where I just think his floor and ceiling are really high. The offense should be a little bit better. I love DeAndre Swift. Plus the offensive line, top five unit in the league that nobody talks about enough. And that was without Frank Ragnow, who missed 14 games. He played 14 games in 2020, missed a handful of games last season. He was one of the best run-blocking centers. I love DeAndre Swift. Love him. Absolutely love him. He's like my RB8 right now.
Dude, it sounds like I have to pass off the Lions fan crown to you. I'm telling you, this team looks good on paper. It really does.
Because I love Swift, but like I was a massive Amon-Ra fan coming out of college. So like once he went to Lions, I was like, I already had a rooting interest, so...
Well, Swift.
I love Swift.
Yeah, I won't repeat too much, but you know, Swift, obviously his role is just hyper value. He was fourth in the NFL among running backs in receptions last year, despite only playing 13 games. I think if he played the full year, it would have been either him or Leonard Fournette that led running backs in receptions. And it's not just the receiving role too. He's an explosive rusher too. According to the FTN explosive run rate tool, Swift ranked in the top 10 with 31% of his runs going at least 15 yards. So he's just a dynamic, explosive player. It's similar to the Austin Ekeler role, right? But I'm not sure what the goal line carries will be like, if he'll have that Ekeler level. But
before he got hurt,
that's the ceiling.
Yeah, he wasn't seeing massive goal line work strictly because the Lions offense still wasn't producing a ton of scoring opportunities. But he was the preferred goal line running back over Jamal Williams before he got hurt. I do remember that. It wasn't like, a massive, like, Swift was in like top 10 or 15 even in goal line carries, mm-hmm. but he was the goal line back over Jamal Williams. And if we think the offense is better, obviously that's good for DeAndre Swift too. I think he's a better pass catcher than Aaron Jones. He's probably not in a better offense, but he's in that same volume role, right? 12 carries, anywhere between like 4 to 6 receptions. Yeah, he's I love drafting him at the turn, right? The start of the second round. I think that obviously in PPR leagues, yeah. So much upside there. Anybody else from tier three want to talk about? We both have Nick Chubb, who I think it's the same argument every year with Nick Chubb. Quote unquote, he's arguably the best pure runner in football.
Who came up with that line, dude? It's everywhere.
It's true, though.
Like, I know it's true. It's just so funny. It's like only used for him.
It is. But the offense should be better. It's just...
Yeah, I've never really drafted him, and it's not because I don't think he's good. Like, I play him in DFS sometimes, but I have him ranked as a fantasy RB1, just not my cup of tea. I like running backs that will, you know, have an over-under of receiving yards higher than 8 each week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I guess the only other player here, maybe you'll talk about him in some in tier 4, but I have Saquon in tier 3 as like a tail end RB1, like top 12 kind of cusp range. And it's really just because we know what he is capable of. I know he's been hurt. His injuries have been worse than Christian McCaffrey's. That's actually why I don't have Saquon ranked a little bit higher. Yes, like the Panthers offense is terrible, but the Giants offense is like worse than terrible. But they do have Brian Daboll now. And Saquon, when he's utilized well, he is like a top 3 fantasy running back. So Saquon's another player, like similar to my take on Christian McCaffrey, is you're playing for the ceiling with him, which is why I have him ranked at the bottom of tier 3.
Totally fair.
I mean, his rookie year, he had 1,300 rushing yards, 11 rushing touchdowns, 91 receptions, and 700 receiving yards. Like, that's a 2,000 total yard season with over 90 receptions. That is league winning.
I would love him to stay healthy and remind everybody how good he is. I definitely am rooting for him. Tier 4, who do you have in tier number 4?
So my tier 4 is big. It's James Conner, Aaron Jones, Cam Akers, Javonte Williams, Zeke, David Montgomery, Antonio Gibson, Josh Jacobs, Breece Hall, Devin Singletary, and J.K. Dobbins.
This is insane.
What's yours?
So a lot of the same players: Aaron Jones, James Conner, Dave Montgomery, Javonte Williams, Zeke, Cam Akers. I have Barkley in this tier, and I have Breece Hall to end it. But the fact that I say it's insane is because I don't have Singletary in this tier.
Dude, you're right. You didn't say where do you have him?
He's in tier 5.
All right. Yeah, it looks like your tier 5 is Singletary, Dobbins, and I put them right at the bottom of tier 4. So I think we have them similarly viewed.
Yeah, and like, again, I really don't think anybody likes Singletary more than me. I just don't have him in my rankings at FTN Fantasy.
What tier is he in for you?
here's my case, though. In my individual rankings, he's not ahead of any of the running backs in tier 4. So it would be kind of weird to put him in that tier. But he could be at the bottom of the tier, technically. Whatever. Fair. He's on the cusp of 4 and 5. But in tier 4, like, I have Barkley. We don't need to talk about Barkley, but Zeke.
Yeah.
Anytime I see Zeke available in the 4th round, I'm drafting him. I understand the concerns.
You've been saying this all along.
Look, like, I think we can all agree Zeke's not like a top 5 running back anymore. I also don't know if he's totally washed, because we got the report he was playing with a torn PCL. But his numbers week through 4, he tore the PCL like towards the end of week 4 and then started playing through it starting in week 5, I believe. But in weeks 1 through 4, he was top 5 in rushing yards, top 5 in yards after contact per attempt, top 5 in rushes of 10 plus yards. He was good. And then we don't know how much of an impact that injury played. And I think the Tony Pollard effect is real. I think he deserves to be on the field. And I think it's no secret he's definitely more explosive than Zeke. But Dallas doesn't care. Like, they're not taking Zeke off the field. It's not like Zeke's going from whatever he averaged, 22, whatever touches per game last year, to, it's not going to be a Javonte Williams, Melvin Gordon situation. As much as the fantasy industry wants Tony Pollard to be an every down running back, and I get it, it's not happening. And especially like in these underdog drafts, I've just been going receiver, 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 or receiver, receiver, tight end, because I know I can get Zeke in the fourth, and I'm fine with Zeke as my RB1 in the fourth, especially in those receiver heavy formats. So yeah, Zeke, like, I like, he's not in my top 12 running backs, but I also think as long as he stays healthy and an offense that should still be good, and maybe has a more of a pass catching role with the injury or the players they're missing, he could easily finish as a top 10 running back again. And I understand, like, he's done, he's been around, we've seen him play for a while, and he was on a per touch basis not as good last year, but fourth round for Zeke, like, I don't care. I'm drafting him there every time.
I think where he's going in drafts is he's a good value. So I agree with you there. I mean, I agree with everything you said about him. I don't really have anything to add there.
If he stays healthy this year and he still has no burst and looks like it's over, like, yes, then I will concede that it could still very well be towards the end for Zeke right now. And it's crazy because he's 26. Like, it's 20.
He'll be 27, I think, when the year starts.
Yeah, it's not like he's back end of, you know, 30 years old. So I'm still very interested in Zeke. Other running backs in this tier, do you want to talk about, like, Aaron Jones, I think, has a ceiling to catch 80 passes now in this offense, but there's also the AJ Dillon factor. We could talk about that. And there is one running back in this tier we both have that I have a wide range of outcomes for, and that's Cam Akers.
Yeah. Yeah. He was bad in the playoffs. I don't have the stats in front of me, but he was like,
yeah, he faced some good run defenses, but yeah, he didn't look great.
And no, like, he didn't look great.
Way faster than anybody expected. It's insane.
But he did look good, like, when he first came back. You're right. Maybe it was just increased competition, but to me, the fact that he looked bad and had bad stats and just all across the board left a sour taste in people's mouths might actually make him a little bit undervalued for drafts next year, because that, like, recency bias is such a real thing. So people are going to be like, oh, I, you know, that's my first reaction. I know it's going to be others like, oh, Cam Akers, yeah, he didn't look very good when he returned. So
yeah,
I agree with you. The wide range of outcomes. But Akers was, he's like a very real threat for 20 plus touches a game. So, you know, if that happens, it will be hard for him to not finish as a fantasy RB1. If he legitimately gets 20 plus touches a game.
We've seen the Rams rely on one running back for a couple years now. Obviously, Todd Gurley, that whole stretch. Last year, Darrell Henderson was a clear, like, he was like a 90% snap share player for the first couple months, month and a half of the season. And then he dealt with some injuries, and they got Sony Michel a little bit more involved. But Darrell Henderson, it's not like he was a back end RB1 for fantasy. Like, you were starting him without question. But it's not like Darrell Henderson was insanely efficient. He was 23rd in yards per touch. Like, he wasn't amazing. So as long as Cam Akers is viewed as the clear starter for this team, he has top 7 upside. But it just depends on, like, if they, you know, I don't think bringing Kyren Williams is much of a, you know, he's literally a pass catcher running back, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, it's Akers and Henderson, really.
Yeah, I think Henderson, kind of going off on a tangent, he's also kind of a value because we were drafting him like fourth, fifth round, maybe even earlier last year after the Akers injury. But now it's just like Sony Michel's gone. It's Henderson as the backup, but like we've seen him be an RB1 in that role, and it still Cam Akers coming off a torn Achilles. Like, it's very possible that at worst Henderson could get 10 touches a game, and he's going like way after, and he should go after the Madison range and everything like that. But like, he could be a value too.
I mean, even when he was doing poorly, like in the Super Bowl, Akers had 16 touches.
Yeah.
And in the wild card round, 19 touches. The next round, 27 touches. He didn't do anything with them, but that's real, real volume.
Before we go to a loaded tier 5, I want to get your take on Breece Hall, because Dave Richard and I talked a lot about Breece to end the podcast on Friday. He has some concerns about Breece, and I think it's very easy to kind of look at how you could be concerned. I think Breece Hall is somebody that probably by the end of the summer goes third, fourth round, probably third, after some hype, you know, preseason, training camp reports, seeing him start with the starters. We'll see stuff like that, and his ADP will definitely climb. Breece Hall reminds me of every rookie running back. He's going to start in somewhat of a committee, I'd imagine. Second half of the season, like we saw with Miles Sanders, like we saw with Jonathan Taylor, like we saw with J.K. Dobbins, like we saw with Cam Akers in his rookie season. Second half of the season, he's probably going to emerge as a 17 to 20 touch per game running back and help you win your league. So if you can kind of get through the first couple months where he's getting maybe, you know, 12, 13, 14 touches per game, if that's the case, then Breece Hall could be really good in the second half because he's an immensely talented prospect. The Jets are a run first team in that scheme with Robert Saleh and San Francisco's running scheme with LaFleur. And the Jets run blocking unit is quietly really good. So what do you think about Breece Hall? We both have him in this tier. I think he's my RB 18 or 19 overall.
Yeah, I think he's in that range for me too. But my take for the Jets, and this is my bold bet for the Jets, is that Breece Hall finishes as a top 12 running back.
I thought you were going to say they're going to win the division and I was about to lose it.
No, the Bills are too good for
Jets
that.
And Lions, year 2022.
The Bills and even the Patriots, I think we'll still beat them. But no, I think Breece Hall, I'm not saying like this is a guarantee, but my bet for them is that he finishes as a top 12 PPR running back. And he's got the dual threat ability, which is almost required unless you're Nick Chubb or Derrick Henry to finish so high among fantasy running backs. You mentioned he's a great prospect. He's big. Almost 220 pounds. He ran a sub 4.4 40-yard dash. The Jets spent a premium pick on him.
Traded up, too, yep. Ahead of Houston, who was clearly looking at a running back. So they traded up knowing that Houston was in front of them to get Breece Hall.
Bro, there's a giant spider right in front of my computer right now. I got to get it.
It's been fun. It's been nice knowing you.
Hold on. I'm going for it. Wish me luck. Oh, I got him. All right. Dude, that was scary. Okay. So anyway, Breece Hall, moving on, is insanely productive in college for 2 years in a row. Had 1,800 yards, 23 touchdowns, basically back-to-back years. And I guess my like kind of hot take is there like that much of a difference between Breece Hall this year and Najee Harris last year? Like Hall just, has just more competition?
Literally just draft capital. Because Najee went in the first round. Yeah. And
but it's only like 8 picks difference. Right. But you're right. First round versus second round. You're right.
And Pittsburgh's depth chart was like insanely bad at running back. Whereas like the Jets still have Michael Carter. You know, Ty Johnson was good for them. But I get where you're coming from. And like as prospects, I mean,
Breece Hall might be better.
he might be. Like,
yeah, I agree.
So I think he's going to be like in that RB 15 to like 20 range to start the season potentially, but like down the stretch he could easily be RB 8 to 12 like you're kind of talking about gets that work. All right, tier 5 is loaded for me. I think you have a lot of players in tier 5 too, so I'll start and get this out of the way. Tier number 5 for me: J.K. Dobbins, Devin Singletary, Josh Jacobs, and I might have to move him up to tier 4. I don't know. I have concerns about Gibson and Jacobs who are both in this tier.
Me too.
Travis Etienne, who also could go in tier 4. Elijah Mitchell, Miles Sanders, A.J. Dillon, Damian Harris, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Kareem Hunt, Tony Pollard, Rashad Penny, and Cordero Patterson.
Dude, I love that you put Patterson in there. He's in there for me too. I think all of my guys are in.
Who did you have that I said in tier 4? Singletary, Gibson?
Singletary and Gibson and Dobbins, but Singletary and Dobbins were like at the very bottom of my tier 4, so they could have been tier 5.
That's kind of where I'm at with them too. So we can lump them into the end of tier 4, or the start of tier 5, either one I'm fine with.
And then I have Penny, Travis Etienne, AJ Dillon, Miles Sanders, Clyde, Kareem Hunt, Tony Pollard, Damian Harris, Melvin Gordon, and Patterson.
Okay, so same players except I have Melvin Gordon in my next tier. But again, like having Kareem Hunt, Pollard, a lot of these running backs are probably going to get similar workloads as Melvin Gordon. So having Melvin Gordon in tier 5 isn't crazy by any means. Let's talk about Jacobs and Gibson. There are massive concerns here. Gibson, we've seen underutilization for a couple years now, despite him being a receiver in college at Memphis, and them still not realizing to use him in the passing game consistently. I will say, J.D. McKissick, who they obviously brought back, not only is he an elite pass catcher, he might be the best pass blocking running back in the league. He's so good there. So I get why he's on the field. But then you have Brian Robinson added in the third round on a team that didn't have a ton of draft capital going into the draft. And then Ron Rivera, he can't stop comparing his current team to the Carolina teams of the past, but he compared Gibson and Robinson to D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. And I was looking at some of the carry numbers during the time they spent together in Carolina. It's a little bit skewed because Cam Newton was also getting like 130 carries during those seasons, but it was kind of a split. It was like 170, 130, 160, 140. You know what I mean? So I have massive concerns with Gibson. And then Jacobs, I was kind of moving up until in a 24-hour span, they decline his player option. They trade up and they draft Zamir White. After an offseason where Josh McDaniels, who comes from New England using multiple running backs, stated when he joined the Raiders that he really likes having multiple running backs. They bring in Brandon Bolden. They bring in Amir Abdullah. They bring back Kenyon Drake, who was a pass catcher for them last year before his injury. And when Drake got hurt, that's when we saw Jacobs start to get more consistent work in the passing game. I have concerns with both these running backs. I really do.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, I just think, like, Washington is continually telling us that they don't want Gibson to be the guy.
Sometimes we just have to listen. Exactly. Yeah. Like, look at the tea leaves. Look at what these teams are doing. And again, it's not just the fact that Robinson was a third-round pick, which is, for a running back, high draft capital.
Yeah.
But again, they didn't have a ton of draft capital to begin with. And it's not like, we talked about with the Bills, right? These teams, like the Chiefs and the CH here. These teams in the Super Bowl window that are pretty loaded rosters. And it's like, okay, this could be a luxury pick at running back. Washington is not in that position.
No. The one potential saving grace for Gibson is, if he's able to retain the goal line and red zone role, he should still be a good fantasy player. He ranked in the top 3 in red zone rush attempts last year behind Taylor and Eckler, ranked in the top 10 and carries inside the 10. And he ranked 3rd behind Jonathan Taylor and James Conner on rushes from inside the 5. And he was not efficient with them. You talked about Eckler being really efficient with converting those goal line carries into touchdowns. Gibson only scored 6 touchdowns on rushes from inside the 5 on 17 attempts. You know, by comparison, Austin Eckler scored 9 on 16. Damian Harris scored 9 on 16. James Conner scored 10 on 18. So Gibson was, you know, probably 2 to 3 touchdowns short of expectation. So does that mean Washington ends up removing him from that role?
You know, I mean, that definitely was Robinson's role at Alabama. So yeah,
it's definitely possible.
Very interesting.
But if Gibson holds on to that role, obviously it's very valuable. We don't know what will happen, but that's a concern of mine too.
Yeah, Jacobs and Gibson, I just don't really want any part of. Like, in my ranking, Singletary's kind of comfortably ahead. And I tweeted like 2 weeks ago, I was like, Singletary over Gibson in fantasy in 2022. And people were like, are you crazy? And I'm like,
I have Gibson in fantasy or in a dynasty league. And I will be looking to trade him away.
Yeah, I mean, he's been so talented too. Like he's really good. It's just Washington.
I want him to be the guy.
Yeah. And it looked, remember how hype fantasy Twitter was when it looked like McKissick was going to Buffalo?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it just completely did a 180. Other running backs in this tier. The reason I have Dobbins in this tier, there's a very strong chance that he and or Gus Edwards start the season on the PUP. They brought in Mike Davis. They were linked to Melvin Gordon. Dave on the pod, he thinks it's possible both running backs start on the PUP. So, yeah, they drafted Tyler Beatty for what it's worth. So that's why I have Dobbins in tier 5. Otherwise, he would be in tier 4. And I think Singletary I can put in that cusp as well. I'm not talking about Singletary anymore. there's a lot of interesting names in this tier, though. Like Travis Etienne, Elijah Mitchell.
Dude, could pop off. He really could pop off in fantasy.
He could be in the DeAndre Swift role. And again, he's back with... We haven't seen him with Trevor Lawrence in the NFL level. We saw him in college and a first-round pedigree. Again, that was in the Urban Meyer era, which seems like it lasted 12 years. But
if he gets the Swift role, but don't forget, he's got round one draft capital too.
I was going to say, and what if he gets more than the Swift role? Because what if James Robinson isn't ready to start?
I know. What if he has 12 to 15 rush attempts per game plus 70-ish receptions? And he's a fantasy RB1 then, like point blank.
He's one player that I've looked at in my rankings where it's like, I feel like I could easily be too low on him.
I love drafting him where he's currently going.
Yeah, absolutely. Miles Sanders, I like a lot more than consensus, I feel like. I understand he didn't score any touchdowns last year.
Jalen Hurts had... Wait, hold on. Did he literally score no touchdowns?
He didn't score one touchdown. Not
is
one.
Is that even possible?
Is that for whatever Jalen reason.
Jalen Hurts effect?
Well, Jalen Hurts had 13 carries inside the five, which was top five number in all football. But, like,
zero
he also
touchdowns.
Wasn't very efficient up close. Like, Boston Scott and Jordan Howard, when they got carries in close, they converted. But the thing with Miles Sanders for me is, remember the start of the season, Philly was super pass heavy, wasn't working out. Then they went super run heavy, and they were the most run heavy team in football to end the season. Miles Sanders, they didn't commit to him for a while. Then they finally did. He was getting like 15 carries a game, which was up from like 10 or 11 a game. Then he got hurt, dealt with multiple injuries. But if he's healthy, I think he's still the clear RB1, an offense that should be better. They add A.J. Brown, still an elite offensive line. I like Miles Sanders where he's going as well. There's a lot of running backs in this range, though. Like, real quick, I guess we can talk about two. A.J. Dillon and Tony Pollard. We know the upside. Like,
yep.
They have standalone value. And if Zeke or Aaron Jones miss time, you're starting them as top 7 to 10 running backs. You're not even.
They're very strong. They're both very strong picks. I mean, Dillon could score 10 touchdowns, even with Aaron Jones healthy the whole year.
Dillon and Aaron Jones, like, legitimately could both be top 15 running backs easily.
Yeah. I mean, the Packers offense is going to be a big wild card for fantasy, but that is certainly a reasonable potential outcome.
Anybody else in this? I mean, you were happy that I put Cordell
Patterson
here.
I mean, he's ranked like RB35 against most consensus rankings, like somewhere in that range. But I think that's probably fair, especially with Matt Ryan leaving. But Patterson finally found his groove in Atlanta, and it was just awesome to see a team use him the right way. And I think New England kind of did it a little bit when he was on there. Like, they made him a running back a little bit, and that
I remember when he was with Chicago and he was literally a between the tackles up the middle running back, and that's it. And it's like, what are you doing? Like,
it's the Bears, dude. It's the Bears. No, but I guess I like Patterson. I don't think he's a fantasy RB1, but I think he's got fantasy RB2 potential. I'm not drafting him as my fantasy RB2, but he's just an exciting, explosive player that I thought I was being sneaky by actually adding him to the list. So I was happy to see you add him there too.
Yeah. Here's the other thing with Patterson, right? So last year, we know a lot of his fantasy production came off lining up all over the formation, right? 32% of the time he was out wide, 18% of the time he was in the slot. Obviously he was in the backfield a ton. I think he was fifth among all running backs in receptions. So we talk about the Falcons, right? No Calvin Ridley this season. Drake London, Kyle Pitts should get a ton of targets. We talk about how bad the receiver depth chart is. At what point do we say, what if Cordarrelle Patterson just catches 60, 70 passes?
Dude, sign me the frick up. Not only that, but they had Mike Davis last year and Patterson.
Yeah, the snaps were always like 50-50 for them too. It wasn't always the touches, but the snaps were pretty much even.
But Patterson was the guy that got the valuable touches. Like, you would expect Mike Davis to be the goal line back and inside the 10 back, but it wasn't. It was Patterson. According to our data, Patterson had 20 rush attempts. Sorry, excuse me. He had 33 red zone rush attempts and Mike Davis had 20. And Patterson had 13 from inside the 10. Davis had 10. Patterson had almost double from inside the 5. So the numbers were like kind of similarly close, but Patterson was clearly favored near the goal line too.
Is he scoring 11 touchdowns again? Probably not.
No.
But could he catch 12 to 15 more passes? It's entirely possible. So yeah, I do have him at the end of this tier, but I do think he belongs because look, his competition right now, I like Tyler Algier. I think the fit for him is awesome in this zone running scheme because he ran zone a ton at college. And then it's Damian Williams, who we haven't seen much. So Patterson should have a pretty defined role. Again, they could have let him go, re-signed him. So he was a free agent. So be interesting to see what his workload is the full season. Any other running backs in this tier that you want to discuss? I mean, we both have Rashad Penny, I believe, who knows? But if we get anything close to Rashad Penny down the stretch of last season, he could be a massive value for sure. CEH is in this tier too, who I don't know what to expect, but maybe they finally get him involved in the passing game. Because remember when he came out of LSU, he was like this elite pass catching running back, and we just haven't seen him using that role.
You know what? He probably will be now because it's like the Ronald Jones effect. Yeah,
it's really
whenever Ronald Jones is on a team, the other running back pops off.
Yeah, and you don't have Tyreek Hill there. The offense is still going to be good. It's just they also, like, since his rookie season, he's just been invisible in terms of goal line carries. They do these trick plays with Travis Kelce. They throw. They run with Mahomes. They do everything but give CH red zone and goal line carries. So Damien Harris, kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. He gets all the goal line carries, but he's probably going to be in a 60-40 type split with Ramondre Stevenson. Yep. James White's going to be back this season, who was obviously playing on third downs. They added Pierre Strong. Damien Harris, to me, it's a run-first offense, which is good. It's an elite offensive line, which is good. But I don't see a massive ceiling here unless he just continues to score a ton of touchdowns.
I recently traded away Damien Harris in a dynasty league in a package where I got Christian McCaffrey. Let's freaking go. But yeah, I'm concerned about him this year and moving forward. I just think drafting Pierre Strong, Ramondre Stevenson is legit good. He was very touchdown dependent last year. Harris did rank really well in explosive run rate. I think he was seventh with the 35% explosive run rate, according to our data. So he's not like a bad player. It's just a really crowded backfield. And you mentioned James White coming back. The Patriots might be passing more. They added Devontae Parker. So I just think the offense ends up looking pretty different from last year.
I also just think Ramondre Stevenson is a better player. According to our data, 38 missed tackles forced for Stevenson, which was 15th in the entire league. And again, keep in mind, 133 carries. Like, everybody else had 200 plus outside of Singletary, who was at 188.
That's impressive.
Stevenson's good. Like, I liked him in college. And again, it was a weird season for him because he fumbled early in the season, was kind of benched for a while. The snaps weren't there. It was a healthy scratch a couple weeks. And then once he got back, you know, in the offense and back acclimated, we saw a lot more. The splits are kind of interesting because if you look at the overall carry numbers, some of those games Harris left early. Some of those games it was a blowout, like I think the Jacksonville game, one of the Jets games were blowouts. So Harris didn't play much in the fourth. But you could see down the stretch that Stevenson was carving a larger role. Add the fact that James White's going to play on pretty much every third down this team gets. It's tough to feel excited about Harris. Like, if you get him as like your RB2 late because he's not going relatively high, I'm fine with it. But that's more so in like half or non-PPR. If anybody even plays non-PPR anymore, I don't know. I don't know if that's a thing.
It shouldn't be. Well, okay. You piqued my interest. I looked up our elusive rating tool at FTN Fantasy, and among running backs with at least 100 rush attempts last year, Stevenson ranked fourth in total elusive rating with 43 total missed tackles on
147
touches. He is good.
Yeah. And he's in my tier six. So moving on to my tier six, Chase Edmonds, who I think you could put in tier five too, but I already had like 75 running backs in that tier. Chase Edmonds, Kenneth Walker, Melvin Gordon, Ramondre Stevenson, Alexander Mattison, James Robinson, Tyler Algier, Daryl Henderson, and Damian Pierce. So a lot of backups like Alexander Mattison. We know how good he is when Dalvin Cook misses time. He's a clear top 10's not even a discussion. It's if he's top five, really, when he's in the field. He's awesome. There's some question marks here, though. Like, I don't know what to expect from Kenneth Walker. I really don't.
Yeah, I feel like we don't end up seeing a ton of him at the start of the year. And if Rashad Penny is like he was at the end of last year, we just might not see a lot of Kenneth Walker his rookie year. That's kind of like my concern with him.
Yeah, and it's like, I personally think Kenneth Walker can catch passes. I know he didn't in college. I think he's more than capable, but he went to the worst team for us to find out. Like,
that's just the worst.
Yeah, like, I don't think he's going to be a league winner in the second half of the season unless Penny, which is possible, misses time. I don't think Carson's going to play. I hope he does because I really love Chris Carson. I hope he can get back healthy, but, you know, drafting Kenneth Walker in the second, and I know Penny's on a 1-year deal, but we'll see. Immensely talented player. I'm just a little, you know, I'm a little confused about the role right away. What do you think of Chase Edmonds? Because I know a lot of people love Chase Edmonds. He's on a per touch basis, efficiency wise, he's been awesome. But you have Mostert, who they said they kind of, they don't know if he'll be ready to start the season, which maybe is why they brought in Sonny Michel. But you have Edmonds, you have Mostert when he's there, you have Michel, you have Myles Gaskin. Maybe they all four running backs don't make the final roster. But then you also have Mike McDaniel, who was calling plays a lot of the time and running the offense for parts last year with San Francisco, giving Debo a lot of those carries. I would guarantee that at some capacity we see carries from Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So there's like 5 to 6 players that could get carries on this team.
Yeah, that's really the only problem with Edmonds. I love Edmonds. I love his talent. I love his ability. I was drafting him last year, even though he was a risk kind of in the middle there. That's always my kind of strategy. I just pick the high upside players. I'm not a very risk-averse fantasy player. And Edmonds fit that bill last year. But when you look at when he gets legitimate work, and I'm looking at our FTN fantasy splits tool now, over his career, when Edmonds has had at least 12 touches in a game, which is not like a ton. I feel like that's a kind of a reasonable number to expect for a player that might lead the backfield, but not be the only guy there. But anyway, when he has at least 12 touches, he has averaged over 17.5 PPR points per game, which is really, really, really good. So it's just a question of how much will he touch the ball. I think that's literally the only question here. And you mentioned there's a lot of competition. And is that enough to keep Edmonds to like the 6 to 8 touch per game area? It might be. I wouldn't do it. I just think Edmonds is better than every other running back on that team.
Yeah, I think 6 to 8 would be egregious. I don't think he's going to get that little of work. And he was like the first, remember, he was like one of the first players signed in free agency. So it was even clearly an effort for Miami to go after and go get Chase Edmonds.
Even if you even if you reduce his touches per game to 8, he still scores 13 fantasy points per game. I mean,
yeah,
he's really good on a per touch basis, and that's what you get with that receiving back role. And he busts off big runs. I've always been a big Chase Edmonds fan, so I think once you get kind of past the RB2 range and you're starting to look for flex players, he's a player that will always be on my list. Even in Miami, I know the Miami backfield is a total mess. Edmonds is the only one I'm interested in, and it's simply because his upside is there.
The rest of this tier, like James Robinson, if he's good to go, will probably get, you know, maybe like Melvin Gordon type workload. Depends on how, you know, successful ETN is. I talked about Henderson, and then I have two rookies in here. Actually, I have three because I forgot to add James Cook, who's right in the edge of this tier. So technically three rookies. Sorry, four, because Walker's in this tier. So Kenneth Walker, Tyler Algier, Damian Pierce, and James Cook. Algier, again, we talked about Patterson, but like I think Algier, with his size and his ability, could be the early downs running back on this team, and Patterson could play in the slot more and just do more pass catching. And I think he fits the offense really well. Like, again, I think he was second in college football in runs out of zone running schemes. The Falcons ran zone as much as anybody last year. If you combine Mike Davis and Cordell Patterson's carries, they were like top 5 in zone rushing attempts. So it's a good fit for Tyler Algier. So I like him. Damian Pierce obviously has a chance to lead this backfield in carries. His only competition are veterans in Marlon Mack and Rex Burkhead. And weeks 11 through 18 last year, Rex Burkhead was getting 17 touches a game. So if you give those to Damian Pierce, who we hadn't seen really as a full-time running back, you know, when he was at Florida, he was kind of in a split backfield, but there's an opportunity for him there. And then James Cook, just in an elite offense, could be just an awesome, efficient player for Josh Allen. Anybody that stands out to you among those rookies, anybody you think we haven't talked about that should be added? Like some of these players we haven't added, I mean, Ronald Jones, Gus Edwards I like, but who knows with him. Michael Carter, obviously downgrade now. JD McKissick.
Yeah, McKissick's interesting.
Hines.
You mentioned earlier. Yeah, Nyheim Hines. James White, potentially. I know a name we mentioned earlier. Once you get past this tier that you've talked about, you're really just taking either... You should really only have two objectives. Number one, you take a guy that has a floor because you just need a fill-in spot. So that's like a Nyheim Hines or McKissick type guy. Or you're taking a backup that could see an expanded role, like a Michael Carter.
Should Rashad White be in this tier?
He actually probably should be. Yeah, I think we overlooked that.
I mean, like, he still has to pass Gio Bernard in the depth chart, but, like, I was such a huge fan of his in college. Like, he had, like, a 19% college target share, which is elite for a running back. They line him up against receivers. Like, he's really talented. And if we see him in any expanded role in this offense, he's going to be a player that you start every week, so...
I kind of hope it doesn't happen just because I love Leonard Fournette so much, but it's certainly possible.
Yeah, I think that's kind of it, right? I wouldn't put Isaiah Spiller in this tier. I wouldn't put Tyrion Davis-Price in this tier. Dante Foreman would probably be in the next tier just because I think he's way better than Chuba Hubbard. And again, McCaffrey has had trouble staying on the field the last couple seasons. Maybe Khalil Herbert in the next tier. He was good when Dave Montgomery was out of the lineup last season, but it's still a really bad offense. I think that's it. I mean, we could talk about more running backs. There's a ton, obviously. It's a loaded position, but this is a good episode, man. I don't even want to count, but we talked about a lot of running backs. And look, things are going to keep changing. I mean, we're going to see players in different roles in the preseason, like Dalvin Cook lining up. Are you excited for the news dumps every single week where it's like, oh, this little bit of news, but it's June, so we're going to take it and run with it?
Every single week. It happens during the summers, but yeah, I mean, I love it. I love the news cycle in the NFL. It never changes, but it's also so predictable. Like just the Friday news dumps. I love that.
So running back preview, quarterback preview in the books. Next up, receivers and tight ends. That'll be next week and the week after. Tyler, what's going on at FTN Fantasy Free this week? Anything other than your series with Larky? Obviously we still have... still at basketball, doing a lot of NBA streams, a lot of NBA articles, and the baseball content has been awesome for FTN Daily. So, again, a lot of great stuff, but anything else from you to look forward to at FTN Fantasy this week?
For me, my focus right now is just the series with Larky. We're still going through the teams. I can't remember which teams are on tap, but we're still kind of in like the bottom 10 teams of the league in terms of draft order. But there's good fantasy players on almost every single team, so it's a fun series to be breaking down.
Yeah, make sure you check it out because it's not just fantasy, right? You guys do breakouts, bets.
We do breakouts, bets, sleepers, and busts.
Yeah, so you're covered. Whatever you're looking for, you're covered there. So make sure you check that out. You guys did three last week, so you have a good sample size. If you missed out on any of them, you can catch up on them before, you know, you guys do what, three or four more this week.
Yep.
So there you go. That'll do it for us today on this week's episode of the FTN DataCast Running Back Preview. This is a good episode. A lot of great information, so make sure you check it out. And please subscribe, rate, review the podcast on iTunes or whatever platform you listen to. Definitely helps us out. Also, check out all the other podcasts on the network, right? The FTN Fantasy Football Podcast with Ray GQ and Josh Larkey. The Fantasy Baseball Pod with Maddie and Vlad. Like, there's a ton of great podcasts. You know, Dangle Betselli with Meanie and Eric Young. Like, there's everything for every sport. We have you covered at FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, and FTN Bet. So for Tyler, I'm Adam. Have a great week. We'll see you next week for the receiver preview of the FTN DataCast. This has been Adam. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to the FTN DataCast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter @APfeiffer24 and @LochnerNFL.